Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there. Today is November 8th, 2017. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 23,563, the NASDAQ at 6789, and the S&P at 2594. Our topic tonight discusses planning for and with children. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori Catanzaro is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. You can talk live on air with me if you would like. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just call in, give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And we should be able to take care of you, hopefully, one way or the other. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So this topic, planning for and with children. How did I think of this? Well, today is November 8th, and as I mentioned, and it is my middle daughter's birthday. Happy birthday, Lauren, if you guys are listening at home. No, actually, Lauren's working. Yeah, so she won't be listening at home, but maybe my husband. Good job, Carl. So happy birthday, Lauren. This got me thinking, though, about ways we can plan for and with children. So what do I mean by planning for children? Well, what might that include? Basically, if you've listened to shows I've done in the past, I talk about the different stages that people go through. And the first stage I call testing. You're going to trying things on, trying on careers, trying on jobs, seeing how they work out. And the next stage might be nesting. And not to say that everyone has children, because they don't, but nesting is that stage typically where you might get into a relationship, might start settling down, buying a home, and eventually may decide to have a family. And if you do decide to have a family and have children, have you thought about it beyond just having a child or taking care of that new little person in your home like a puppy or a kitty cat? Puppies and kitties are so cute, but they do get older, and so do children. So I think it is wise, if you're thinking about that, to see if you can kind of plan for having children. And maybe there's parents out there listening tonight, grandparents out there listening tonight, or folks who have adult children who may be moving into that stage and thinking about children. It would be a great benefit to sit down and kind of talk things through. You don't want to have to be so practical all the time, but being practical in the end does make a difference in your financial life and your finances and how you get through life. A little practicality is okay. There's probably a quote with Mary Poppins about that. I don't know, thinking back, about just being practical. So planning for children, we'll talk about just briefly. And then I want to talk about planning with children, because one of the setbacks, I think, or the disservices we do to our children is not talk about money in the household. I don't recall my parents ever talking much about money. I do recall us working all the time, all of us, all the kids working. And so maybe they didn't talk about money, but we knew we didn't have it. So if we wanted it, we had to work. So we learned quite early the value of money and working and saving and paying for things that you had. But not all kids have that opportunity. And especially today, not all kids have that opportunity, because quite often what we find is we might try to do better than our parents. So, you know, if I was raised in a home where I had to work all the time from a very young age, and all my siblings did as well, the next thought for us raising our kids might be, well, gosh, we had to work quite a bit. Wouldn't it be nice if our children didn't have to work as much? So we give our kids a different opportunity than what we might have had. And then in hindsight, we think, gosh, maybe we should have had them work. Sorry, I just think some of this is amusing. That's what my brother and I will say to each other now. Gosh, maybe we should have made the kids work, you know, from the time they were 12. But you know, it's okay to do better for your kids and hope to do better for your kids. But if you're not having financial conversations with your children, then I think it's doing a disservice starting from a young age. And it's never too late. And might I add, if you're not having financial conversations with each other, if you're married or in a partnership or have, you know, other people maybe that you might even just share housing costs with, you need to have financial conversations with the people in your life. I think it's, you know, it's good policy to talk about finances rather than have distrust, nervousness, anxiety, delusions, because that happens as well when you're not talking about money. If as a couple, you don't talk about money and you just keep spending when you don't have it, that's delusional. But then there's times where one spouse might be very tight with money and the other spouse wants to spend. In the end, it might balance out, but there's a lot of anxiety and maybe conflict with that. So I think it's a good idea to get in the habit of having financial conversations with each other and with your children present as well, because they will learn that it's not something you should be afraid to talk about or something that you should ignore. Bring it to everyone's attention. So briefly, let's talk about planning for children. What might that include? Housing, health insurance, food, education. And in fact, there was a study done by the Department of Agriculture, a report back, I don't know when this was, I got this off of Time.com, and also CNN did an article relating to that. And for 2015, to raise a child born in 2015 through the age of 17, the cost of raising a child had hit $233,000, $233,610 to be exact, according to this report. So the cost of raising a child for a middle-income family born in 2015 through age 17. If you're planning on having children, this might be something you want to pay attention to, because as you go through life making certain decisions about your own lifestyle, knowing that some of that cash flow that you have today while you're single or married with no children, your lifestyle without that responsibility could be very different than the lifestyle you will have once you have children and have to start taking care of some of these expenses. So I'm coming up on my first break, and I'm going to, when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about some of those expenses, the biggest expense of raising a child. So that's awareness for planning for children. And then we'll move on into planning with children, some ideas about talking to your kids about money and helping them understand it. And in doing so, it may help you yourself. Folks, if you have questions, you can call in and we can talk live on air, 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. The number again, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about planning for and with children tonight. And before the last break, I had mentioned that a recent report from the Department of Agriculture had estimated that the cost of raising a child born in 2015 to age 17 was $233,000. That's just to 17. I have a 21-year-old and a 24-year-old still at home, so that till 17 might be a little shy these days. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing if you have questions. Now, some of the expenses in this report were kind of highlighted in an article that I found on money.cnn.com, and this was, oh gosh, do I have a date on this article? I don't have a date on the article. But what they talked about, the biggest expense of that $233,000 is housing. Housing was the biggest expense for middle-income families, taking up an average of 29% of the total cost of raising a child, driven mostly by the cost of an extra bedroom. Extra bedroom. That's interesting. The second one was food. Food's the second biggest budget eater. Three, another big expense is childcare, which costs parents an average of $37,000 per child, according to the government. And we can break down some of those expenses as well as we go through this. But I have a caller on line one right now, Jennifer. Jennifer, can you hear me?
Barely.
Okay. Hi, Jennifer. Can you hear me better now?
I'm talking. Yes.
Okay. How can I help you?
I actually have a question regarding like the tuition account program.
Uh-huh.
I have one for my son who's now that I had since actually before he was born because it was one from when I was a student that I never used and transferred into his name.
Okay.
Now that he's a middle schooler, he's looking more into going into a trade field and probably won't go to a school for higher ed.
Okay.
At the same time, I'm a college student myself, so I'm trying to decide whether to keep the money in his name and benefits of that in case he does go on to school, or whether to just transfer it back to my name and use it for my own expenses.
Well, if he goes to a trade school, I think that the 529 account, if you're talking about the college savings plans, the 529 accounts, the qualifying education is undergraduate and graduate work. So the trade school, is that going to count as undergraduate work?
That's where I'm questioning it. Like, I know if he goes to a community college, then yes.
Yeah, right.
I'm not sure a trade school itself, like if he joined a union and went and got training through them,
right.
If it will.
Yeah, I don't have more details on that as far as the trade school. So kind of like some of the we have some of those trade schools locally. I've not seen anyone use it for that. And I'm like looking at a resource right now and it just mentions undergraduate and graduate school. And I think typically they have to be kind of like qualified institutions. So like, as you said, the community college, I think, could work, but the trade school may not. If that's the case, then you could put yourself as the beneficiary on the account and use it for yourself for tuition. And,
okay.
And room and board, technically, too. So,
yeah.
So that is definitely an option. So how old is your son?
He's 13, eighth grader, so he still has 4 years to make the decision.
And you're in school now.
And I'm in school
now.
So
that's a little bit of a dilemma then.
Yes.
Well.
So, and I know, like, as long as he has more kids, we could transfer it to his kids when he gets older.
Uh-huh.
I know I could transfer it to my niece. Like, there are people we can give it to.
Right.
It won't go wasted, but
well,
it's just trying to figure out what works best.
Are you... You're in an undergraduate program or a graduate program?
Graduate.
Right. So you know that you would qualify for it if,
yes.
And don't disclose anything on the air here, but I would look to see, do you have loans? Are you having to take loans? Is money tight? You know, the markets have been doing pretty well now. You might want to look at how that 529 account has performed. If it's done well, maybe you could open up an account with you as beneficiary and transfer over some of it instead of all of it. You don't have to do all of it. You could do some of it. So you kind
of
hedge your bets there. Yeah, so you hedge your bets there a little bit for you, a little bit for him. That might be something to think about. So I would try to review your own cash flow, your own, you know, how tight you are, or if you're taking loans, this might be a really good option for you at this time. But, you know, you do have 5 years for him, which isn't, you know, a ton of time if he decides to change his mind. But
right,
yeah.
But it's still enough time. He could, and it's hard to tell.
Right. So maybe hedge it a little bit. You know.
Okay.
Do a little bit of both.
Keep thank you.
Use some of yourself and some for him.
What?
Use some for yourself and some for him. So review your situation, though, Jennifer, and see what works. And if any of that idea sticks, then pursue checking it out and see if that works for you. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Good job. Thank you.
All right.
Take care. Bye. Good question. Good call. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. That is, you know, one of the benefits of setting up those 529s in Pennsylvania. We do get a deduction on our tax return, which is, you know, an automatic 3.07% tax savings if we have income and, you know, within the limitations and everything. But it's also the opportunity to let those accounts grow. And if it is used for qualified education expenses, it is tax-free on the growth and earnings. So they're a great benefit. But you can change the beneficiary on the accounts. So if you have someone who isn't going to use it and you have another family member who is, then that is an option to change the beneficiary. And you don't have to do it on the entire account. I think you can move over part of it. So that is something that Jennifer could check out. If the money is not used for qualified education expenses and you just take the money out, at that time, then you would have to pay the income tax on the earnings. And if not used for a qualified education expense, there would be a 10% penalty on just the earnings. So you'd have the income tax on the earnings and the 10% penalty on the earnings. But there are exceptions to that penalty if the child received a scholarship or other certain circumstances, like going into the military. Then there would be an exception to the 10% penalty if the money wasn't used for that. Okay, so there are some other options. So you want to explore all those before you make a final decision. So talking about planning for children, we talked about the cost of raising a child is so high, and housing, food, education, and the article that I was referring to was the money.com, money.cnn.com, talked about how much the cost of raising a child will change over their ages. So when they're young, the cost isn't as much. You think you're paying a lot for diapers and you know, formula and all of that. But as children get older and they start going to school, now you're driving them around a little bit more. They're eating more. So the transportation costs go up, the food goes up, clothing costs go up. Maybe they're having to go to school and wear the same thing every day. And when they're a baby, you put them in a onesie every day, which is what I did to my kids. So you have to be aware that those costs will rise as they get older as well. And then, in fact, when they're teenagers, they may end up needing you know, phones and cars and driving themselves around because maybe they're going to sporting events and you're at work. So you want to be aware of all those costs as they go up. You also want to make sure that you're paying attention to the education, as we just talked with Jennifer. Are you saving for education? The sooner you start saving, the hope is that your money will start working for you and your money will start making money so that you're not having to save as much. So the sooner you save, hopefully your money will start making more money with the power of compounding. We've talked about that on prior shows. So we'll finish up that part of the topic of the show. And when we come back, we'll talk about planning with children. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're live tonight, and you can call in with questions, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C., and she'll write it down, 610-758-8810. So another part of planning for children is you've thought ahead, you've thought about the housing, you were careful in your purchase, you bought less than you could afford, which is what I promote, buy less than you can afford, and knowing that you might be planning on growing a family, you know, you want to make sure you have a bedroom big enough for that teenager. You know, a crib can fit in an 8x8 room, but a 6'4" teenager may not be able to fit in the 8x8 room. So kind of plan for a growing family. Think all of that through. But on top of that, you have a bigger responsibility now too, because now not only might you have to make sure that you've provided for a survivor in the event something happens to yourself, meaning a spouse or a partner, you also have to make sure that you're providing for this child. And that would include their future housing, caregiving, and possibly education. So you also want to look at your risk management, life insurance, disability insurance, and homeowners insurance. You want to make sure you have all of your risk kind of covered in case anything happens, all right? And that includes the cost of that future living expenses and education. And also planning for the unknown. So you want to make sure that you have your estate planning documents done, that you've thought about who you would want to be your guardian for your child. You think about powers of attorney. Do you have to have a trust now that you have a child in case something happens to you and you have a minor and your assets would end up going to this minor child? Do you have the proper language? There's a lot involved. So if you are planning for children, whether adopted or natural, or maybe you're the guardian for nieces or nephews, you want to make sure you're also managing those risks. So either with life insurance, disability insurance, your health insurance, homeowners insurance, make sure you have all those risks covered, and then also make sure you have your estate planning documents in order as well. So let's talk about planning with children and financial literacy for your children. So what is the financial language at home? Is it one of discipline and awareness? Is it open or is it secret? Do you just say, oh yeah, let's go out to eat, let's get this, let's get that? You want to think about what is that financial language at home, because our kids hear everything. If you swear, they end up swearing. If you're drinking, sometimes they end up drinking. So they emulate us more than anyone else. So you want to make sure that you're using and being careful about the dialogue you're using for financial discussions at home. Right now we have a call from Regina in Allentown. Hi, Regina. Can you hear me?
Hi, not very well.
Okay, I'm wondering what's going on tonight. Okay, can you hear me a little bit better now?
I'll just say I can.
Okay, how can I help you?
One thing, when you were talking about expenses for children and increases as they go older, as they get older,
right?
One thing that popped into my head was school lunches.
School lunches, yep.
And the dollar here, the dollar there. School fundraising?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. My concern is I have two girls, which are definitely the more expensive sex, in non-public high school, and I have an eighth grader who's also in non-public high school.
Okay.
So there's a lot of money going out the door already with tuition.
Yep.
And that's not a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
It's the number one priority in house.
Right.
I hear different things from different parents about savings being good for you when you apply for financial aid and savings being bad for you when applying for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stuck on that. We're at the point that we can.
Right.
That we can start putting things away. I was even thinking about taking up to a certain amount out of an inherited IRA, investing that more. I think, no, I can't, I don't want to touch that because I can't finance my retirement.
Right. So what happens, Regina, when we talk about financial aid for college, what they are looking at in certain formulas is something called the expected family contribution, the EFC, the expected family contribution. And that is based on certain assets that the parents have and certain assets that the child might have. So in some respects, it's not an encouragement for our children to save money because there's a bigger expected contribution they have for the money that they've saved. And I myself was a victim of this back when I was a kid and went on my own. But parents' expected contribution, gosh, it just ran out of my head. I think it's like 5 or 6% or something, but they don't include your retirement accounts or your home. So when they look at expected family contribution, they're looking at the assets that you as the parents have individually. The children have a higher contribution. And again, gosh, I haven't done a college show in a while. I'm thinking it might be like, oh gosh, is it 15% or 30%? So the kids' expected family contribution is much higher. So that doesn't sound like it encourages savings. But here's the thing, Regina. A lot of people don't qualify for financial aid anyway. And this is what I try to explain to folks. When we're so caught up in trying to not manipulate, but be smart about what we're doing with our savings accounts or saving for college in 529 accounts, sometimes we think we're going to be able to sway our financial aid package because of, you know, where we're putting our assets. And a lot of times there's this formula. They're looking at your income and they're looking at your assets. So my point to families is if you already aren't going to qualify for financial aid, maybe you should just keep saving and putting aside money in the 529 accounts. If you as parents put money away in a college savings account for the kids, so maybe even the kids' savings could go into one of those, into the parents' account, it doesn't count any more than your regular assets. So a lot of times the financial aid that people are really qualifying for, and I'm talking about middle-income people, a lot of the financial aid that middle-income people are qualifying for is really loans.
Yes.
So, you know, the loans are subsidized if your income is really low, and sometimes you can get loans where they're not subsidized, and that just means the interest is going to accrue while your child's in school. I mean, it's going to keep building up. If they're subsidized, you don't have to pay the interest. That's a great kind of loan. But what you could do is go on the FAFSA website, and I think it's FAF.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, the FAFSA dot, I think it's dot gov. You got to be careful not to go to the dot com. I think it's dot gov. And they have like little formulas and calculators you can use. But right now you had mentioned your inherited IRA. That is a protected asset.
Any I don't want to touch that.
Yeah, retirement accounts don't come into that calculator. In fact, inherited IRAs, they might change their mind on that one, but technically they don't count the retirement account. So just watch out for that. But run that calculator so you can see if it's worth you trying to worry about this, because maybe it's not going to make any difference anyway.
Right.
Yeah. It might make a difference for private school, but, you know, run the calculator and see before you get stressed out about it. I still would have the kids save the money because they can buy some of their favorite things before they go to school. They because, you know, then they can run their account down, you know, before they go to college, before you fill out that FAFSA form. But hey, Regina, thanks for calling in. I have to go to my next break, but thank you
okay.
for calling in. Have a good
take
one.
Take care now.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Folks, we're taking a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 48 on Thursday. You have a slight chance of showers after 1 p.m. Partly sunny with a high near 52. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 31. Friday, sunny with a high near 37. Friday night, it's going to be mostly clear with a low around 18 degrees. And on Veterans Day, sunny with a high near 40. Back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And I realize I'm going to have to do another show on the FAFSA, because if I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, you know what's been happening? I'm trying to understand the tax reform proposal. That's what's wrong. I have too many numbers that are changing in my head. It's making me crazy. So I'll do another show on that. But if, Regina, you're still listening, I have done shows on that. You can go to the podcasts that are available on wdiy.org. I did a show, I know, at least a couple years ago, but I think I try to do at least one show a year on financial aid. All right, folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll take calls live on air or off air. I'll do my best to answer any questions you have. And questions are also available through email. You can email me through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. All right, so planning with children, financial literacy, how are you talking at home? How can we get our kids involved? Let's talk about that a little bit. So I had gone on the internet, of course, and found a website that I thought was pretty cool. And it looks like it might come from an insurance company, Northwestern Mutual. The website is called themint.org, themint.org. But when I look at all of the kind of underlying who wrote the articles, it seems to be Northwestern. But they talked about how well and how often do you work money management topics into daily conversations with your kids. And talking about money with the very young child, like, for example, talking about the extra money being like an umbrella that keeps you dry in a storm. So let's say it's raining outside and you're running out and you've got the umbrella and look, we're protected. And that's what mommy does or daddy does with our money too. We have to set aside some of our money. So when your kids go to the store, you can say, hey, we don't want to spend all of our money. And that is something I used to do with my own children from the time they were little. We would pull into the parking lot. We say, we're going to go to the store. And before we got out of the car, we had a conversation and So all expectations were set before we went into the store. So before we go into the store, I would say, okay, guys, we're running into the store. We have to get, you know, cereal and milk or whatever. We're going in, but we are not going to buy anything extra today. We're just going in to buy what we need, and we're going to go in and we're going to come out. So you have to know we're not getting anything extra today. The expectation was set, and I can't tell you how often and great that works. I did not have screaming, yelling, crying children in the store when we were in the grocery store line, you know, buying our groceries, and they're screaming and reaching for the Reese's peanut butter cup or whatever it might have been, because I set the expectations. We said, this is what we're doing. And they knew they weren't going to get anything. I recall one time, I think one of them acted up and we went immediately to the car. We were done. Not going to finish any shopping, so that they understood that wasn't going to happen. But what they also understood is the discipline of knowing that you're going in and you're taking care of business and you're not lollygagging. I can't say the word. Doing things without thinking. That's what discipline is. It doesn't have to be so strict that you sacrifice or, you know, don't live your life. I don't believe in that either. But there is something about having a presence of mind when you are going in the store and spending money. Now, I don't want you all to think that I am so great at that, because I'm not always. But sometimes I'm in the mood to shop. And when I'm in the mood to shop, I'm going to go in and shop. But for the most part, I don't like shopping at all. So it's not too hard to keep me from shopping. But when you kind of have these conversations with your kids, it's helping them understand discipline, focus. We're in to do a job. We're going to take care of business. And then there are times when you can do special things like, okay, you know what? Let's do a good job with ABC. And then this weekend we will, you know, go to a matinee, or we will, you know, go to Wendy's or something and get a Frosty. It doesn't have to be extravagant. You can do things simple, and then they understand you can still have a good time together. And if you always associate spending time with your family and your kids in a good way, then they get the pleasure from being together and having quality time and quality moments instead of the pleasure from material things. So you want to start those conversations and make them present and see when you're having good times together without having to spend money. The article goes on to say, with older children, kids around 10 should begin to understand that you save for unexpected events. So you can talk about that. Getting a flat tire, you want to make sure you have money to replace the tire. Teenagers should know that an emergency fund gives you security to live without borrowing when they need money, when the need for money arises. I know when my daughter was young, I was a Girl Scout leader. They had badges. One of the badges was, I think, money. I think it was literally called money. There were two money badges because I taught lessons on both of them. But we talked about the differences of money when you save it, in a bank, when you invest it, or when you borrow money and how much it costs. So one is working for you and one is working against you. It's good to have these kinds of conversations with your kids as they're getting older. You don't spend money just because you have it. So think about it. What else did we talk in this article? The mint.org website also had a section, questions to consider, and modeling money smarts takes a serious parental commitment. Parents should consider the behaviors they're modeling to their kids, and to be more aware, they suggest asking yourself these questions. Do my kids see me economize? Do they see me shop more often at outlet malls or high-class boutiques? Do I suggest that shopping is entertainment? Do I wait for an item to go on sale? Do I regularly clip and use coupons? Do I send in rebate offers? Have my children ever seen me save up for large purchases? Or do I whip out the plastic when you see something I want? Let's talk about plastic for a minute. I was talking with Lori about this before the show, and she had mentioned so often people use debit cards nowadays. So you don't really have the concept of what that the money looks like. And not only do so many people use debit cards, but I would propose to say that young people strictly use debit cards. I recently spoke at a class of freshman women at Cedar Crest College who have it's for non-financial majors to learn more about financial awareness. And I asked the question, who uses debit cards? And all of the students raised their hands. They all use debit cards. And I turned to the instructor and said, hey, EB, do you use a debit card? And she said, no. And I said, I don't use a debit card either. So we're an older generation. We don't use debit cards. But what they might not understand, it's not because we're older we don't use debit cards. We're smarter because the issue with debit cards, if you don't understand them, is debit cards are tied typically to a bank account. And if your debit card is stolen or compromised, the perpetrator could drain your bank account. Whereas a credit card has certain protections against it. And, you know, our credit card had been compromised once after we had been on a trip, and someone was buying hundreds of dollars of gift cards all over New Jersey at all different kinds of stores. And the credit card company called us, or we called them one way or another, because they've called us a number of times when they've caught a suspicious behavior. And we weren't responsible for any of those expenses. I know there's certain protections when people use debit cards, but not always, or it might be to a certain limit. And do you really want your child to be the one who suffers those consequences? Maybe they're out on a dark road some night getting gas in their car so that they can get home, and they go to use their debit card and there's no balance left. It could be a little scary. So there's reasons to kind of talk through why would someone use a debit card or not. But as Lori and I were talking about, though, if they're using debit cards, they're also not understanding the concept of cash and what it means, because the bank account is like endless, if it may possibly could be or feel like it. Whereas if you have $20 in your wallet, $20 cash in your wallet, and that's all you're going to spend, well, that is all you're going to spend if you don't have the debit card. Whereas if you're out with friends, you have the $20, you're out with friends, that's as much as you're going to spend. And in fact, there's a hesitancy to spend all the money in your wallet, right? So right there is a built-in discipline and training. I have $20 in my wallet, but if I spend my $20, I'm not going to have anything left. So I might only spend $10. That way I have $10 left. It's kind of like automatic, you know, budgeting. Whereas if I have my debit card and I go out with friends, maybe I have a drink, maybe I get an appetizer, and then I'm feeling pretty good because I had that drink and we're having so much fun and we're laughing, and I get another drink, and then I get something else because my debit card makes me feel like it's endless. So these are the kinds of things that we hope that as parents or grandparents, we're not doing this ourselves, because that's not necessarily controlled, disciplined, you know, behavior. If we want to encourage our children or grandchildren to be savers, then we want to, you know, be that example for them and be careful about how we're spending money or talking about money and thinking about money. So let's be careful with those debit cards and how we're using them. Now, so to my point, I use credit cards. My husband and I use credit cards. We put everything on the credit card. But what we tell our children is we get to see everything. We know what we're spending. We're watching what we're spending. We see that. And we pay off our credit card every single month. And this is what we say to our children. Oh, gets paid off every month. Gets paid off every month. But I will tell you that there's also a bit of a temptation to spend more than what you might have as well, even with a credit card. There are credit cards you can buy that have a balance, and that can help you keep in control or help your teenager or young adult keep in control. I believe you can buy or get credit cards that maybe have a limited balance, $1,000 or something like that. If you do that, then maybe they can work on their own credit, building up their own credit, which will help them financially in the future, either renting or buying a car or buying a home in the future, by having good credit, but they could start with maybe something where there's kind of bumper guards on the credit card so that they don't overspend. But the important thing is to get in a good habit. So, for example, if they were going to buy something for $100, they want to put it on their credit card, and they, you know, if they're not going to pay it off, you know, would they be willing to spend $129 for that same shirt that someone else got for $100? And the $129 is because there could be a 29% interest rate. Now, granted, you pay it off early, you're not going to, you know, have that rate. But an annual rate of return or annual interest rate on some of these credit cards might be 29%. You want to build that into the kids' heads. Would you really pay 29% more for something? That's why we want to pay off our credit cards every single month. It's a good habit to get into. And I know there was a time when I was young and I was charging my college education. I didn't pay it off every month. But once I got there, man, it's heaven. And it's really powerful and empowering to not have any debt. Folks, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Thank you. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about planning with your children, financial planning with your children, money awareness, that kind of thing, financial awareness, financial literacy, whatever you might call it. We need to have more conversations in front of our children. One of the other suggestions in this on this website, themint.org, was letting your kids know about the bills you're paying. So I grew up in a house where we didn't talk about financial stuff really at all. As I said, if you wanted money, you had to work. that was the financial conversation. So, and I wanted to buy nice clothes, so I worked like a dog. But anyway, they talk about when you're sitting at the kitchen table, talk maybe about the monthly bills. So you're at the kitchen table, you have a nice dinner. How much did the steak cost? No, we didn't buy steak because we could afford chicken, or we didn't buy chicken. We're having, cheese and bean tortillas, that kind of thing, because everything has a cost. You can talk about the cost of food. You can talk about the cost of electricity. Growing up in the house, maybe my father might have said, turn the lights off. Well, I didn't know maybe that he wanted the lights off because it meant we were paying more for electricity. Explain what you're talking about instead of just yelling about it. Why do you want me to turn the lights off? Why do you want me not to run the water? You know, I tell my kids don't run the water for environmental reasons, not necessarily because I was worried about the water bill, but it helps for kids to have some understanding around, what the bills are, the utilities and food and their phones and, you know, are they roaming a lot and costing extra on the phones? You know, that is one thing that I think we have not really kind of realized in this society. Growing up, we didn't have, I didn't have cable bills growing up. We didn't have internet, we didn't have cell phones. And when I look at the utilities, when we talk to people about financial planning and I say, well, what are you spending on all of these things? And you say, here, you know, $180 for cable, $150 for my phone. I mean, it's incredible to think that we're spending so much for our phones and our cable and our internet. It's just incredible. And, you know, one place to really save a lot of money, folks, is to get rid of cable. Now, I do have cable now, but I didn't have cable for 15 years of my, you know, adult life with my kids. We didn't have cable. We spent all of our time, well, we'd watch movies, but spent most of our time talking or doing crafts and homework. Homework took so many hours. And yes, we would sit with our kids doing homework for hours and hours. They also have on this website a daily opportunity challenge, themint.org. It was kind of fun looking at some of these things. Do you recognize opportunities? So, for example, when you watch TV together with younger children, do you play devil's advocate to the ads that pelt your kids every 10 minutes? You can help make kids less accepting of what they see. Any regular listener knows I've talked about this a number of times. I used to tell my kids, no, Snow White is not in the macaroni and cheese box. They would learn that the macaroni and cheese company would put a picture of Snow White on the box just to get my kids to scream for the macaroni and cheese. Well, my kids didn't scream for macaroni and cheese, but I would have them understand that. And I'd say, kids, what is that? And they would say, marketing. It's one of my favorite stories. They were so cute. We have a caller on, I'm not sure which is line one. David, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Lori?
Good. How can I help you?
Well, I was listening as I was driving home.
Hi, Dave.
did they just tell you which Dave it was?
No, I see. I hear your voice. I recognize your voice. Go ahead.
I've had a number of conversations with my six-year-old where a lot of times they ask me, like, why do you have to go to work? You know, if I'm leaving early or I won't see them. And just kind of very basically will say, well, you know, the things that we have in our house, they're not free. We need to, you know, have to earn money to pay for our food and, you know, keep the lights on and all that stuff. And she's kind of a smart aleck. And, you know, she said, well, that's not important for me. And I was like, oh, really? So your dance class is not important for you and your swim class is not. And, you know, I try very hard. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to engender a sense of guilt.
Right.
In my children, it's kind of a privilege to be a parent,
right.
But more of a sense of appreciation and responsibility in that, you know, all these things we have, they're not just given to us. And, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, I do want to be talking about money appropriately, for my children, throughout their lives.
Yeah. But Dave, that's a great example because actually, if you think about it, we're thinking from a parent's perspective, an adult's perspective. And I think that was a great comeback from your child. And maybe it wasn't that she was being a smart aleck, but true to point, that in her mind isn't important to her. And I believe, you know, you don't want to guilt them, but wouldn't it be funny? Some night they come down for dinner. And have the kitchen table completely empty. And they say, wait, where's dinner? Oh, well, someone had to pay for it. That's why I went to work today. or it's dark so early now. Can you imagine going into the house, turning off all the lights and saying, oh, wait, that's why we have lights? So all of a sudden it does become important, even to a six-year-old. But that's a great comment.
You know, and I hope my hope is that by starting these conversations young, I don't have to figure out how to explain to a 15-year-old for the first time about money.
Right.
And it's been surprising. I imagine you have this experience in your practice as well.
Mm-hmm.
The number of clients who will come down and say, you know, I just don't know anything. I'm not financially literate. No one taught me about this. And, you know, where do I begin? Which is such a great disservice to, you know, our society that it's not being taught in families or schools or somewhere.
Right, right. Well, even my oldest daughter will say, you know, I don't want to deal with that. I'd let my husband deal with it. And she does, and he does a great job. And I'm like, awesome, Sally, that I'm so glad you've married someone who's so smart with money. But then it takes me aback because I'm thinking, wait a minute, what have I been raising you to do? Honey, I wanted you to be engaged. I wanted you to do this. And maybe she's so sick of hearing about it, I don't know, that she decided to let go. But I I do think it's important for even couples to have those conversations. But hey, Dave, you need to come on the show again. You guys, any listeners, Dave's been on the show a few times. It's been a while, so we need to get you come back on. We can talk about more fun things like this.
That sounds great. We'll book it, and I'll let you go wrap up the show and have a great night.
Okay, thanks for listening, Dave. Have a good one.
Thanks,
take care. Bye-bye. That was a great example, though. I think it's really funny, and what a smart kid to come back and say those things aren't important to me. Sorry, I love kids. I just absolutely love kids. Since it's my daughter's birthday, my middle daughter, I will say this girl, quite driven. When we were talking to our kids when they were young, we'd tell our oldest one, she was very, very smart. We'd say, your job is to get an academic scholarship to help you pay for college and, you know, do a good job and, you know, we're going to help take care of you kind of a thing. And she did get a really big scholarship, but she also went to a private school, which cost a lot of money. So it didn't cover everything. So the second child, Lauren, whose birthday it is today, I said, Lauren, your job is to get an athletic scholarship because with an athletic scholarship, if you can get into a D1 school, you know, and you're really good, you get a full ride. And that's what she did. And she worked very, very hard. And she got a full ride. So one of the things we told Lauren was because she didn't cost us anything and we were prepared to help pay for her college experience. Now, granted, playing volleyball cost a lot of money in high school when you're on these, you know, more advanced teams. You have to travel to Philly for, you know, tournaments and practice a few times a week. There was some cost to that. So it's not like we gave her, you know, all the money that we would have paid for school. But she was very committed, knowing that if she got a full ride and college would be paid for, she knew that she would end up with a payoff in the end. So that hard work really, she ended up benefiting. So she came out of school and we gave her a chunk of money, some of which is invested, some she's used for living expenses, and she has a car. So, you know, I think you help them to see these things. My youngest son is in college right now and, you know, debating what major to be, what career should he go into. And part of his decision making is, you know, what kind of career can I have for the lifestyle I want? And what is the anticipated compensation that I'm going to get? Now, my only worry about this is I do believe people should kind of do what they're passionate about. I like people to be happy, but I also am a practical person. So you do want to factor that in as well. So, for example, I was very practical when I ended up getting a degree in accounting because I knew I could get a job in that. It wasn't what I was thrilled about doing and really didn't even like it. But eventually, I was able to take that career and, you know, springboard it into a different career that I'm not doing just accounting and dry accounting. I'm getting to do planning and, you know, taxes and that kind of thing that I love. So I was able to segue that career choice or accounting major into something that I actually liked. So when you can be practical in those ways and find something that you love and make good money at it, that works out pretty well. So my son is in the midst of doing that and recently told me he was going to be an accounting major. So what I told him about that is it gives him a lot of options. So that is also part of the conversations I think that we should have with our children when we're talking about making good financial choices. There was a program on, was it All Things Considered yesterday? A Shireen Marisol Meraji had done a story. And the story was titled, More Than Half of Latinos Surveyed Say Applying to College Wasn't Discussed with Them. And, you know, they interviewed a couple of people. I didn't get to hear the whole interview, but two of the women they interviewed had both gone to college. And one had said it really was not discussed in her family at all. I don't think her mother or father had graduated from high school. So it wasn't discussed really at all. And then another woman interviewed had said it was like drilled into them. You are going to college. You are going to college. My father did not graduate from high school. My mother graduated when I was old enough to know. So she did not have those opportunities. They were born in the 1930s. So they had different things happen to them. But it was, expected that you were going to go to college. It's just, I think from my mother's perspective, it was this longing that she always wanted to go. She's a very smart woman, always wanted to go, didn't have the opportunity. So it wasn't forced on us, but it was certainly the expectation and the desire that, of course, you know, you're going to go to college. So when you're talking to your children about financials and numbers, getting a good education is probably one of the most important things you can talk to them about, because that is probably the biggest driver to them being successful financially in the future. Not in all cases, but one of the biggest drivers. So please, in your conversations about financial literacy, please talk about continued education in college in some regard. It really makes such a difference in employment and opportunities. And that's what being successful is having opportunities. All right, folks, next week we are going to talk about disaster planning.